This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Christen this budget Barbie camper Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
I'm a man. Well, nobody's perfect.
You don't put a bra in a dryer.
I'm gonna pinch the toast.
I will not be upstaged by some slut with mutant lungs. I'm a homosexual.
Aren't you forgetting the ruby slippers?
You're guilty of nothing.
I believe you were expecting me.
Is butter a carb?
But you're not a girl, you're a guy. And why would a guy want to marry a guy?
This is gonna get me my third Tony Award.
Don't stomp your little last season Prada shoes at me, honey.
Outtakes is the home of queer cinema and television on Joy 94.9. And it's Conrad and Alan with you. And we're bringing you some reviews and interviews for the return of one of our favourite film festivals for 2024. Before we get into it, Alan, it is so lovely to have you back on the programme after a little extended break.
Oh, thank you very much, Conrad. It is lovely to be back after my Christmas and New Year and relocation.
Yeah. You're our you're now one of our official interstate correspondents in a way, but still very much in the Melbourne team.
Oh yeah, very good. I mean, look, I live on the border, yeah. So you know, it's just, and I have look, and there's every likelihood that I'll probably move back across the border into Wodonga at some point. I mean, who knows?
We haven't lost them completely, people.
Yeah, soon I'll be Victorian again. Soon, I hope.
Amazing. Well, you picked a great show to return for, as this year's Mardi Gras Film Festival is back, screening in Sydney this February, then with a selection of on-demand content streaming nationwide in March. For full details on the lineup of films, events and more, check out queerscreen.org.au. If you tuned in last week, you would have heard my in-depth chat with one of our favourite returning guests, Mardi Gras Film Festival director Lisa Rose, where she gave us the full scoop on this year's festival. And if you missed it, don't stress. Head to joy.org.au/outtakes or wherever you like to listen to great podcasts to catch up on that show. So this week, Alan, we're turning our attention to some of the films and talent on offer in this year's MGFF program, and we're starting with a film that received an 11.5-minute standing ovation when it premiered at the 2022 Venice Film Festival. Monica stars Trace Lissette in the lead role as a trans woman navigating the world on her own in LA before receiving a call to head back to Ohio to help care for her estranged dying mother, played by the always incredible Patricia Clarkson. This is the third film from writer-director Andrea Pallaro, who will be speaking to us later in the program. Here is the trailer for Monica.
Hey, love, it's me. I know you said you wanted some space, but I miss you a lot. I just wanted to let you know that I will be coming. I'm gonna hit the road and I should be there in a couple of days. It's been a long time since I've seen them.
I'm just so happy that you're here.
Ready?
This is Monica.
Hi.
Hey.
Your mother.
She doesn't know who I am.
I don't know what I would do if I couldn't be with my own mom at a moment like this.
I gotta say, I never would have recognized you.
Listen, whatever's happening, it's not worth it. Family comes first.
I know you told me not to call, but I just need to talk.
I can no longer be your mother. That's what she said to me.
I
everything okay?
Things have been very tough around here. When are you gonna tell her?
What's your name? Please remind me.
Monica.
That was the trailer for Monica, one of the great films on offer at this year's Mardi Gras Film Festival. So, Alan, we were both lucky enough to see a screener of this film in advance so we could let the good people know about what to expect with Monica. Look, I'm going to be right up front with you on this. The cast got me over the line right from the get-go. I will watch anything with Patricia Clarkson in it, but I'm also a really big fan of Trace Lissette, who has done a lot of TV roles, really, up until now. She did have a brief appearance in Hustlers. She was in Transparent and Pose as well. This was her, I guess, first really big leading role, and as I mentioned, it got her a lot of attention at the Venice Film Festival, and generated a lot of discussion about the lack of these types of roles for trans women in feature films as well, and how this is quite an incredible opportunity for her to really showcase her talents as well. It's a really tender indie film, but it's got so much going for it in terms of its look and feel. There's a lot of things I'd really like to highlight about it, but I am, as always, Alan, interested to know, what's your take on Monica?
Conrad, I'm going to have to burst your bubble. I'm really sorry. I struggled with this film. I felt that it was really slow. It was a very long film, and the plot and the narrative moved very, very slowly for me.
Right.
And so that was number one. And number two, I don't think that this was anything new for me. I think that this was coupled with, look, I'm seeing the story, a familiar story, I believe, of a family member that has been outcast and has been ostracized from their family and now having to return home seeking some kind of re-engagement, rapprochement, some sort of catharsis or renewal. And I just felt like I'd seen it all before, and I also felt that it was just really slow.
Yeah.
And I struggled as a result of that. So for me, like I just couldn't connect. I couldn't get into it.
That's interesting. I
can say is other people might connect with it more, but I struggled.
So I take that as a fair criticism. You know, like, this is all subjective, and we're not always going to agree on everything. For me, I actually do agree with you. It is a very slow-paced film, and a lot of what it's communicating is done visually. It's not giving you a lot of dialogue at times. It is really kind of giving you the space, I guess, to kind of see what's going on around these main characters. I understand what you're saying too. It is a familiar story. For me though, taking it from a trans woman's perspective, I thought was a bit of a fresher take on that kind of outcast and then coming back in story as well. And I have to kind of bring it back to the fact that in the hands of the cast, which alongside Trace Lissette and Patricia Clarkson, there's also the wonderful Australian actress Emily Browning, who plays the sister-in-law, and some really incredible supporting performances in the mix there as well from other family members, and a really beautiful performance from one of the caregivers for Patricia Clarkson's character as well. But look, in saying all of that, Alan, I kind of want to take a step back, I guess, from the pacing of the film. For me, one of the things that I found really beautiful about this film was the cinematography is incredible. it relies a lot on kind of taking you from LA to Ohio and really, I guess, showing the difference in Monica's life in when she's navigating it as a trans woman in LA and just really surviving in lots of ways to being back in that familiarity of Ohio, but as the true authentic person that she is. I don't know if it's something potentially that I've been going through in my own life in terms of going back to where I came from recently, reconnecting with a lot of people in different ways. Definitely not on the same level as Monica in this film, but I guess for me, my head and my heart really connected with this film a lot more because of where I'm at in my life. And I think that for me is probably something I'd like to hopefully sell to people in terms of if you take this movie on, it is slow paced. It is definitely not going to overwhelm you with a lot of, I guess, dialogue or action, but there is a really beautiful story in there. And I think, like anything, you know, it can be the best movie in the world, but if you're not potentially in the mood for it, you're just not going to really get into it. And I think that's probably says a lot as well. But was there any aspects of the film that you did connect with at all? I do want to highlight that I particularly loved the music in this film as well.
Yeah, well, look, I agree with you. I thought that Emily Browning's portrayal of the sister-in-law was fantastic. I really enjoyed her on screen. I thought, you know, I'll give you that. I'll give you a tick.
Yep.
And you're right. I'd say that the cinematography was engaging. I mean, it was beautiful. It was It was beautifully shot. There was that sense of being in the moment. Like they did that, you know, the director did that very well and the cinematographer did that very well. But again, I sort of bring it back. It was just too long in the moment. It was just, you know, just a little bit faster paced, cut it down a little bit, like 15 minutes, 20 minutes. I mean, then it would have been, you know, much more engaging for me.
Yeah.
Conrad, I'm interested to know why you think this film had a 15-minute ovation.
What
do you think inspired that?
It's all about Trace Lissette's performance. She is incredibly charismatic. She completely captivated me from the first moment she was on the screen. There's something, she is incredibly tough and very vulnerable, and that to capture that on screen is really challenging, and the director does a brilliant job of it. And I just think, yeah, the performance itself, there was a lot of talk about awards for her performance, and I think that was something that a lot of people were really hoping would happen. It hasn't, but I do think it's setting Trace Lissette up for something very exciting and very special, hopefully in the near future.
Can I say, I did not recognize her at all from Transparent. I didn't.
It was only a one episode role that she had with one of the characters,
but memorable in Transparent. I didn't recognize it, but of course that was many years ago, of course. Yeah. And so, you know, like the rest of us, time marches on.
Yes, it sure does. But look, it's definitely a film that has got a lot of people talking, and it's definitely one that I think for a lot of people, it will really connect with them as well. So coming up next, Ellen, I'm very excited to speak with Andrea Pallaro, the co-writer and director of Monica, which is screening as part of the 2024 Mardi Gras Film Festival program. You're with Conrad and Ellen for Outtakes.
You're listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9.
Outtakes on Joy 94.9, and it's Conrad and Alan here bringing you reviews and interviews from this year's Mardi Gras Film Festival, which is on now. Visit queerscreen.org.au for full details. As we discussed in the first part of the show, Monica is the latest film from Italian-born and US-based screenwriter and director Andrea Pallaro. This is his third feature film, with each featuring incredible performances from actors including Charlotte Rampling, Catalina Sandino-Marino, and Trace Lissette. When we caught up recently, he was in Los Angeles taking a break from working on an upcoming project. Here is part one of my interview with Monica's co-writer and director, Andrea Pallaro, for Outtakes. Andrea, it's such a pleasure to meet you, especially after seeing Monica recently. It's a film that I've been really excited to see for a long time. And when I saw it, that it was in the Mardi Gras Film Festival, it was my first pick of the film that I wanted to see.
Oh,
yeah.
It means a lot. Thank you.
Oh, and
thank
I'm so
I'm very happy to be talking to you.
Oh, fantastic. Well, look, it lived up to my expectations as well. It's such a beautiful film, and we'll get into all of that. But before we start actually talking about the film itself, I'm really interested to know, how does Monica fit into your filmography? Is this part of the trilogy that you've that you've been working on?
Very good. You have done your homework.
A little bit, yeah.
Yes. It is part of a trilogy, the second chapter of a trilogy that started with my previous film titled Hannah, starring Charlotte Rampling. And it's a character study, I would say, that explores themes of abandonment and the consequences and the dynamics of abandonment and the lengths that we go to in order to heal the wounds of abandonment. And these are three films that focus on female characters, actually. Yeah. And Monica is one of them.
You very much like working with a strong female lead, which is really wonderful. And you're very good at picking the talent for your films as well. I just wanted to... I read that in... Trace Lissette was cast in Monica in 2016, and obviously the film kind of came out in 2022, and it's still rolling out around the world. Is that normal for you to have such a long development period for a film?
Well, for these type of films, unfortunately, it is. It does take this long. My previous film, Hannah, took as long, I think. Created even more obstacles was COVID. In fact, we had two waves of COVID and we had to push production a couple of times because of that.
Right.
But I hope that it will not take as long for my next film.
Yeah. Well, look, it was well worth the wait, as I said.
thank you.
To see
thank
it.
You very much.
And I think that the story itself is really beautiful, and it's one that I think will resonate for a lot of people, but I'm really interested to know, what was it about this story in particular that you wanted to tell?
Well, you know, first of all, I should say that it's a film that is heavily inspired by the life and the story, really, of a very dear friend of mine. Right. Someone that I met when I first came to LA, and, you know, who's a really important person in my life. That being said, for me, it was about giving the opportunity, creating an opportunity for the spectator to recognize themselves into the life of a character like Monica, you know, and to create a bridge, a connection, you know, because I do believe that you know, the experience of abandonment is something that is so inherently human. It's something that we can all relate to in one extent or another, to a certain degree, at least.
Yeah.
And it's something that impacts our relationship with the outside world, but also the relationship we have with our own selves. And I've always been very, very interested with... you know, what that means, you know, with like, and by abandonment, I don't only mean the actual physical act of being abandoned, but also, you know, the experience of not feeling recognized, not feeling understood. And this was really my main intention, is to offer the spectator the opportunity to go through a journey like that and to recognize themselves in this journey, and possibly even to learn something about themselves.
Yeah. Look, it works on so many levels. There is I think probably what a lot of people are focused on, and for good reason, is the cast and the performances. You have Trace Lissette in the lead role of Monica, Patricia Clarkson playing her mother. There's also an Australian connection in there with Emily Browning.
Yes, yeah, the great Emily Browning, yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about how Emily came to be involved in the project?
Oh, of course. Well, at first, it was the most consequential choice that my collaborators and I could make for this film was obviously to find, the artist, the woman that could embody Monica. And once we found Trace, after a very extensive, long process, I saw more than 30 candidates for the role, and it was over a year in time. But once we found Trace, the rest of the cast actually came through pretty easily, because Patricia Clarkson, jumped on board right away. And then when it came to the character that Emily Browning plays, it was really through my fascination and my awe of the performances that Emily has gifted us in the past. And so it was really just an offer, and we jumped on a Zoom call, actually.
Pretty
much like this one. And then that was the beginning of our collaboration. But she's absolutely extraordinary. I do hope that I will have a chance to work with her again in the near future.
We love hearing that. She is a real talent. And look, one of the things that I think a lot of people hopefully heard about was that when the film premiered at the Venice Film Festival, it received an 11.5-minute standing ovation for the film and for Trace's performance as well. That must be incredibly validating. But what does that actually mean for the film? What does that actually do for your film?
Well, it was certainly an experience that, my collaborators and I would remember for a very long time. And I would always remember the moment where, I turned around looking at the Trace and Patty, who were, just experiencing it as well. To feel the emotion, to see the emotion in her faces was so very profound and meaningful. It made all the struggles and the difficulties and the tears and sweat all worth it, That being said, it's really meaningful when, you get that kind of response, because it's a confirmation that the work does connect with audiences, and people respond to it, and they have their own experience with it, an independent individual experience, but still one that fulfills the goals that we set for the film, so it's for sure it's very meaningful.
Coming up next, part two of my interview with Andrea Pallaro, the director and co-screenwriter of Monica, which is featured in this year's 2024 Mardi Gras Film Festival program. You're with Conrad and Alan for Outtakes.
You're listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9.
Outtakes on Joy 94.9, and it's Conrad and Alan with you, where we've been taking a look at this year's Queer Screen Mardi Gras Film Festival. We just heard part one of my interview with screenwriter and director Andrea Pallaro, whose latest film Monica, starring Trace Lissette and Patricia Clarkson, is featured in this year's MGFF. Monica is the story of a trans woman estranged from her family who returns home to care for her dying mother. During this time, Monica revisits past trauma and abandonment issues, while also reconnecting with some of the people from her life who loved and still love her the most. Here is the trailer for Monica.
Hey, love, it's me. I know you said you wanted some space, but I miss you a lot. I just wanted to let you know that I will be coming. I'm gonna hit the road and I should be there in a couple of days. It's been a long time since I've seen them.
I'm just so happy that you're here.
Ready?
This is Monica.
Hi.
Hey.
Your mother.
She doesn't know who I am.
I don't know what I would do if I couldn't be with my own mom at a moment like this.
I gotta say, I never would have recognized you.
Listen, whatever's happening, it's not worth it. Family comes first.
I know you told me not to call, but I just need to talk.
I can no longer be your mother. That's what she said to me.
Is everything okay?
Things have been very tough around here. What are you gonna tell her?
What's your name? Please remind me.
Monica.
That was the trailer for Monica, which is screening as part of this year's Mardi Gras Film Festival. I recently spoke with the film's co-screenwriter and director about the film, its development, and how this beautiful movie is resonating with people all over the world. We rejoin my chat with him by discussing how he navigates telling other people's stories in a respectful and authentic way. Here is Andrea Pallaro in Los Angeles for Outtakes on Joy 94.9. You've touched on the fact that the themes of abandonment, and there's also, you know, it covers off on, I guess, trauma, and particularly around childhood trauma in this film, is very relatable for a lot of people. But Monica, at the heart of it, is very much telling the story from a trans woman's perspective as well. How did you feel about navigating that as a filmmaker, you know, making sure that you were respectful and understood, I guess, telling someone else's story in this way?
Yes, well, for me, it was very, very important from the very beginning that it always felt like a full-blown collaboration. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean and it's especially with Trace in this case, you know, because the film does center around Monica, and you know, Monica is virtually in every single scene, and carries every single scene. And so, you know, my collaborator and I, Orlando Tirado, wrote the screenplay, and that really served as a blueprint for what the project turned out to be. But the nuances and, you know, the embodiment of Monica really came from collaborating with Trace and allowing that collaboration to take over, you know, to trust it, you know, and to build that sense of trust. To me, that actually is the most satisfying thing. Yep. Of making a film. Mm. It's the most satisfying part of making a film is precisely that, the collaborating element of it.
Yeah, It really does come through, and obviously you've worked so closely with your Orlando, the writer of the film, on your other three films as well. So you can really sense that you understand each other's styles and really respect the way that each other, what you bring to the table as well. It really comes through with the film. It's one of the other things that I just absolutely loved about this film is how visually captivating it was. Not just the, I guess, the scenery and the sets and things like that, but you really captured a lot of vulnerability and also a lot of strength in the character's performance. But one of the other parts of it that I really loved was the music that you used in the film as well. Is that something for you that music plays, you know, a big part in kind of driving these types of stories for you?
Yes, of course, because it creates a rhythm. And the music was really used in two ways. One, to, you know, give more complexities and a backdrop for Monica's emotions. And in other ways, actually, to create a resistance to it, you know, to create like more a contrast. And most of the songs that were chosen actually were written in the script in the writing phase. So it's something that we had selected even before production started.
Right.
And, you know, also the use of sound is completely diegetic, you know, meaning that, you know, the spectator is experiencing only the sounds that are within the world of the film, mm-hmm. and there is not a music score imposed on it.
Yeah, it was a real highlight for me, especially when Common People by Pulp came on. You got me back listening to Pulp again, which has been really fun. I love that song.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. That was actually, and that's one of the most beautiful moments for me in the whole film, you know, like, you know, how, you know, the camera movement, the lighting, you know, the composition of the frame, Tracy's performance, how everything comes together, you know, in such a cohesive and integral way. It's very powerful.
It really is. It's look, I can't go on enough. We're going to be obviously telling people to go and find Monica and go and see it at the Mardi Gras Film Festival and check it out wherever they can. My final question for you, Andrea, is Monica is the conclusion of your trilogy. So I hope this question doesn't fill you with too much dread, but what's coming next?
Well, actually, that Monica is the second chapter of the trilogy.
Okay. Oh, great.
A third film, because my very first film is not part of the trilogy. But that being said, actually, I do have a few projects I'm in development, and some of them are very personal stories that are not directly connected to this trilogy, in fact. I do have the third chapter of this trilogy also in the works, but we'll see what comes first. It depends on so many things, so on a number of elements, of course.
Of course. Well, look, we wish you all the best with whatever comes next, and thank you again for such a wonderful film. It's definitely been one of the highlights for me. I was hoping to see it last year, but you know, it took this long for me to be able to finally see it, and I'm glad it did.
Much for your kind words, Conrad. It means a lot. Thank you.
No, you're welcome. And thank you so much for being on our program. We really appreciate it, and hopefully we'll get to speak to you again sometime soon.
My pleasure. And I do really hope that we get a chance to talk again in the future.
That was Andrea Pallaro, whose fantastic feature film Monica is part of the lineup for this year's Mardi Gras Film Festival. Check out queerscreen.org.au for more details on that and all of the other great films and events on offer this year. Coming up next, Alan and I take a look at the Mattachine Family, another high-profile feature in this year's MGFF, which stars Nico Tortorella and Emily Hampshire. You're with Conrad and Alan for Outtakes.
You're listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9.
Outtakes on Joy 94.9, and it's Conrad and Alan bringing you some of the highlights from this year's Mardi Gras Film Festival program, which is on now. Check out queerscreen.org.au for more details. One film that has been gaining a lot of attention for its cast and fresh take on modern queer parenthood is The Mattachine Family. The film stars Nico Tortorella and Juan Pablo Depache as Thomas and Oscar, a gay couple who spent a year as foster parents to a young boy whose mother was in jail. However, when she is released, she regains custody of her son. Thomas and Oscar are then forced to confront their very different visions for what they want out of life when they find themselves in disagreement on whether to pursue parenthood again. The cast also includes Emily Hampshire from Schitt's Creek and also Heather Matarazzo, Jake Choi, and many more familiar faces who round out this pretty sweet, quite funny, and very timely tale. Coming up, we'll be hearing from the lead actor Nico Tortorella about his experience with this film, working with the real-life gay couple who wrote and directed it, and so much more. But Alan, you got to see this film as well in advance of it coming to the Mardi Gras Film Festival. I was pleasantly surprised by this this little film, but I'm really keen to know, what did you think of The Mattachine Family?
Geez, I'm going to come across as a real
Grinch.
Really am. I mean, look, this film I thought was quite sentimental, saccharine, and look, I felt that it was overly, God, I don't know what the word, I mean, I'm going to come back to sentimental again. It was sappy is the word for me. And, you know, just this over intense sentimentality that was coming through, it just didn't gel for me.
It was. It's interesting you say that. One of the things that I read a criticism of this film was that it is picture perfect. And I think that is probably something that they could have leaned away from a little bit. It's trying to be very relatable, but for the where it's set and the, I guess, the presentation of the people involved, you know, you've got a successful photographer, a working actor, a Hollywood actor as well, and they're kind of, you know, really upwardly mobile friends and everything. I guess for a lot of people, their struggles to kind of figure out whether or not parenthood is for them and dealing with the kind of upheaval of potentially moving and all the things that come with this type of story, it should be more relatable than this really is. And I think that unfortunately has a lot to do with the fact that what they were trying to do by bringing in a lot of very, you know, well-known faces and some recognizable talent potentially kind of took away from what is in there is quite a sweet story. But yes, it does sometimes lean a little bit too heavy into the sentimental and sweet. I agree with you on that.
Look, it was number one, it was fluff. Number two, I think there was flaws in the script and in the writing.
Okay.
And in terms of the plot, you know, the device of the partner number one, this is, goodness, what's his name? I'm so
sorry. Thomas.
Nico's character, yeah. Thomas's character, first of all, doesn't want kids. His husband wants kids. And it's sort of like, you know, the actor had to convince him on numerous occasions to try, you know, to try parenthood. And then all of a sudden, here we've got one major advocate who's desperate to try and get Thomas to come along on this parenthood journey. And then all of a sudden it's switched over and now he doesn't want to be a parent at all. And the reasoning behind it just doesn't stack up. It was completely unbelievable. Dropped me out of the film. And really? I just thought that is just poor script writing and no amount of good acting could save it. So I was really disappointed. I was really disappointed with that. So that's why it really lost me. It lost me because just bad writing. And it was fluff.
I just need to clarify though. So the bit that you say was bad writing was when they flipped it from him being, I don't want kids, to then being the one who really was pushing to explore parenthood. Is that
not him. It was Oscar. It was Oscar's U-turn that really turned me off the film, because it was Oscar who was pushing Thomas hard to become a parent, was convincing him. And then finally they do become a parent. And then all of a sudden, when Thomas wants to continue his parenthood journey and then potentially look at surrogacy or some other option, Oscar's out. He's out of the picture saying, oh, no. And then like threatening, this is it. It's all over, Red Rover. And I'm like, I'm sorry. But that is just not real. If you're going to make a decision to become a parent, you're not going to flip overnight. You're really not. That's my view anyway.
Yeah,
so
that's interesting,
I must admit, I was kind of like, you are disrespecting me and this plot, this plot device.
And I think that's
not working.
And I think that's really important, Alan. What you're saying is that what they were trying to make is a very relatable story. And I think they were trying to tap into that potentially they know people like this, or that they, you know, socialize in these types of groups. It is a very LA film. We do need to emphasize that as well. It's really interesting that you say that, because that bit didn't bother me as much as the way that they continually were trying to, I guess, move the story along by bringing in new characters to try and explain why it could be good or why it might not be good for them. I felt that they were really trying to show all of these different perspectives, but weren't really making a solid point other than the fact that the two leads had reversed their position. So it was actually slightly confusing, I guess, at times at what they were trying to convey. And I don't want this to sound lazy, but one of the things that kept on carrying it for me was that the cast is good and they were acting really well. And there were certain scenes that were quite amusing, they were quite well written. But I agree with you, there's a part in the film where it kind of feels like it loses its way and it tries to find its way back by throwing everything they can at it while trying to utilize these really good actors and this quite, you know, lovely cast. And some of the support performances, I mean, I have to bring it up again. Emily Hampshire, who played the wonderful character in Schitt's Creek, who managed the hotel, whose name has completely gone out of my head. She is such a delight to see on screen anyway, but again, I don't know if having the familiarity of having her and Nico Tortorello as both as people that are quite recognizable is what this film needed. But I think for you, it sounds like it needed a complete rewrite.
I mean, what was the point? I'll tell you what the point was. For me, it was like, okay, these Mattachine steps. I'll tell you, while the film was rolling, I was busy scrolling through Wikipedia and learning about the Mattachine Society.
Yes.
Now, I know I've come across it in the past, but obviously because it's so American-focused, centric, it's obviously gone in. It hasn't really stuck. But, you know, watching this film and reading about the Mattachine Society really does make that stick for me. And that's the one good thing that's come out of this film, is that it's making people do a wiki journey to know what the hell is the Mattachine steps, what's the meaning of this title, and then they'll understand some history around the formation of gay rights and gay groups that are fighting for our rights back in as early as the 40s and the 50s. So, you know, talk about our elders. So I thought that was very... It was a great prompt for me to go back and review some gay history.
I don't know if that was their intention, but I love that it did that for you. And there is some really fantastic documentaries about the Mattachine Society. A couple of free ones on YouTube as well, that if people are inclined, they might want to check it out after they've watched the film, perhaps. But look, I think, Alan, this one is going to get a certain audience, and I don't want to discriminate against you or I, but as men of a certain age who have seen quite a lot of films, this one perhaps is not as fresh or as interesting take on this subject that has been covered in lots of other films you and I have apparently that you and I have absolutely seen. But I think for some people, particularly some younger people and potentially some gay couples, it could maybe, you know, help them perhaps have some discussions or think about it a little bit more, or it just might make them question why they're so poor and why they don't live in LA. I don't know. Either way, it's you know, if you're just looking to be entertained for a little while and look at some very good looking people, this could be the movie for you. But I agree with you, Alan. There's some elements to it that I think what they were trying to aim for, they didn't necessarily hit. And that's okay. Yeah. And we're okay with that. I do want to just quickly mention as well, Alan, we've covered, as we always do, many films over you know, the past year that do seem to kind of eventually cycle through and end up at other film festivals or get a general release. And with this year's Mardi Gras Film Festival, there's some really great films that we've already covered on the program and reviewed in depth. That's including Mad About the Boy, which is the Noel Coward documentary, All of Us Strangers, which I have gone on at length, and I won't bore you with how amazing that film is again, but if you haven't seen it yet, please do. The film Our Son with Billy Porter, and the classic film Another Country, and so much more in there. Alan, is there one film in particular that you'd like to let people know about at this year's Mardi Gras Film Festival?
Look, I really enjoyed the Noel Coward film, All About the Boy. I thought he was a fascinating character, and I think, you know, this sort of follows on from my last comment about the Mattachine family and and looking into our history and understanding where we come from and looking at our elders. I think this, you know, the Noel Coward film gives you a sense of what it was like to be queer, to be gay a century ago, and how he navigated that, how he navigated being gay in a very homophobic world and being famous. So famous as well.
I think
and so talented. And I like to talk about a poly, you know, they say like a Renaissance man, a Renaissance person. He was like a polymath.
Yeah. He's everything a quadruple threat.
Incredibly talented. Yeah. Like, so, I mean, who knew? I mean, who knew? Now I do. So, listen, I just thought it was wonderful. It was a wonderful experience.
I agree.
More about Noel Coward.
I agree. It's a really fantastic documentary. It was also one of the ones that Lisa Rose highlighted in our chat last week. Look, for me, Goran Stolevski can do no wrong. I loved his last film, which we've talked about at length on the program as well. And his latest film, Housekeeping for Beginners, is just another triumph. He's such a filmmaker to watch. And I love, you know, talking about him and celebrating his films on our program as well. So look, so much to check out at this year's Mardi Gras Film Festival. Visit queerscreen.org.au for more details. That's it for another Outtakes. Our sincere thanks again to Andrea Pallaro for being on the show, and of course to my co-host with the most, Alan, for joining me as well. As always, if you enjoyed this program and want to hear more from us, visit joy.org.au/outtakes. We'll be back again next week. Until then, please take care out there. I'm Conrad, and he's Alan, for Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
You've been listening to Outtakes, the home of queer film and television on Joy 94.9. Want to catch up on past episodes? Head to joy.org.au/outtakes or search Outtakes on your favourite podcast platform.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.